AM 1240 and 95.3 FM, WJON. I'm joined now by Dr. George Morris from CentraCare. Dr. Morris, thanks again for giving me some time.
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm good. So let's talk about the numbers. In relation to last week, what are the numbers at St. Cloud Hospital of COVID-19 positive cases?
It continues to be a challenge. We have that same high number where we're higher than we were back in May, you know, so it's about equal. At those levels, continue to see a lot of intensive care ICU patients. We don't have as many patients in our regionals, so I know a lot of times we focus on St. Cloud, but we have seven other facilities, so those numbers are down a little bit. We have a few in Caris, Wilmer, and we have more in the long-term care, so kind of the nursing home. So we are seeing, again, the outpatient numbers, they've gone into our inpatient, and that stays a high, high level. And now we're also seeing more numbers in our long-term care nursing home settings.
So the numbers are, you said, as high as they were in May. Is that the highest you had been over at St. Cloud Hospital?
Yeah, that was. That was our peak, the initial surge that we had. And we can track that. That's also, essentially, you look at the timing of it on the MDH website, and maybe I could send you a graph or something, Jay, if visually that helps out. I know we're talking on the radio more, but visually, if you think of where we were back in May when that was perceived as the surge, the first surge, we're higher than that, now.
Okay, so this is the highest point that we've been, at least locally.
Yes.
Okay, and is that both in those that are hospitalized and those that are in ICU?
No, our ICU is down from what it was initially, and I owe that to, two or three things. We are doing a very good job of taking care of people before they get to that super sick kind of level, if you're sick enough to be in the hospital, you're sick. ICU is, another level beyond that. So we're really trying to do a very good job of using those new treatments, using remdesivir, using convalescent plasma, using antibody therapy and steroids, dexamethasone, along with oxygen and the techniques of care, nursing care, and just good care to help prevent people from getting super sick. And we're doing that. We're also seeing, but we still have young patients that are both in our hospital with COVID and in our ICUs with COVID. And that's part of our challenge is younger people tend to get it and stay outpatient. However, we are seeing young adults in our inpatient and in our ICU area.
When are ventilators used? When someone makes it to the ICU?
Yes, ventilators are in the intensive care unit, ICU. That's kind of one of our, and that's a standard, healthcare, all hospitals. If you need a ventilator, that's an intensive care. The team of people and the expertise of the people to help manage that, that's what's best found in an ICU.
So remdesivir, something we've talked about a number of times over the last few months, has that been the most effective drug that you use to treat COVID-19 positive cases?
It is. It's effective. It is part of the treatment that we give people, though. So I do believe it's a combination, and it's the oxygen, and it's knowing when to use it and how to use it is a key. Remdesivir is key. The steroid dexamethasone is also key. There are challenges if you use it too early. It decreases your body's immune response. Too late, that's not good enough. So there's a sweet spot, so to speak, in there. And that's what our team is doing. And then there's the convalescent plasma, or basically getting your body antibodies to help fight this. So it really seems to be that combination of each of them together that helps people out the most. And so it's kind of that mix. And our team is really getting better at identifying how much of each to use.
Are you familiar with President Trump's positive diagnosis and the treatments that he received?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell me, did he get the standard type treatments? I mean, did he get about the same type of treatment that people are getting here if they have COVID-19 at St. Cloud Hospital?
I will say that I'm not his treating physician, so I'm not aware of all of the specifics of his diagnosis or treatment plan. With that in mind, I will make a couple, you know, broad comments. As I understand it, and these things have been reported before, I think his doctors, you know, recognize that. So he received oxygen, he received remdesivir, he received dexamethasone, he received an antibody treatment, and there may have been, you know, one other thing. Those treatments in a average patient are used when you are in that sick to really sick kind of timeline. So again, when you're sick enough to be in the hospital, but we want to make sure you don't get worse or need to be in the ICU, they are not the standard treatment for somebody in an outpatient setting, and nor will they be at any time, you know, that I can see, though I know treatment standards are changing. But my sense of it is what we give our outpatients, what we give our lightly sick people is in line with the broader standards of care, and we reserve those high-level treatments for the high-level patients that need it.
That's not necessarily, I mean, based on the treatments and the information that was given, that he was not an ICU patient.
No, he wasn't. And these are the challenges, too. We also understand that if I'd call it, you know, pull out all the stops, that would be my, you know, brief, succinct impression. I think they were pulling out all the stops to try to help take care of our president. And whatever beliefs we all have, we all want every patient that has COVID to get better. And I really hope that we can all say we want our president to get better, to get healthy as we continue to move forward with this crisis.
So when it comes to treating someone, the steroid that you talked about and remdesivir, how often does somebody get doses of remdesivir and also the steroid? How often would you use that on individuals? And I know probably every case is somewhat different.
We use remdesivir. There are some criteria, you know, for using it. And we use it very frequently for those patients that are sick and looking like they may become sicker. And we're really identifying now that if you wait too long, it's not as effective. So we're trying to find that spot where it's the most benefit. The steroids often, and the treatment for remdesivir is at least a 5-day course. You know, so you get it daily, you know, serially during 5 days in a row. The steroid sometimes is a short course. You know, just steroids work by decreasing inflammation or affecting your body's immune response. So sometimes you'll just do a short burst. Other times you'll do a little bit longer, you know, 5 days, 10 days kind of cycle. And that's kind of where we're using it. And we are using it frequently in our hospitalized patients.
Can you tell me about when someone is diagnosed with COVID-19, is there contact tracing that you seek out from your hospital?
We are more the recipients of the contact tracing. So these are the jobs of, we know our role is to provide that high-level care. A lot of times the role of public health, whether that's local, you know, county public health or MDH, typically Minnesota Department of Health, does most of the contact tracing. So we more receive that information from them about, you know, possible contacts or the contact tracing. We don't direct a lot. Now, we look at our own employees when we have employees that get sick, but I think that's true of many businesses, and even the schools are looking at, well, what to do when a student or a staff member either get exposed or have COVID. Then you kind of want to know, because oftentimes you're the local business owner, local school, or for us as an employer, we know who they work with, who they have break with, who they go to lunch with, who they commute with. So those are parts where we could contribute to contact tracing.
Now, so many illnesses, viruses out there, there are issues where people are infected and maybe even contagious before they have any type of symptoms. That's certainly kind of a dangerous time period. What is the expectation for someone that might have COVID-19? How many days prior to having symptoms were they contagious?
It ranges. We see a lot of people that they could contract the virus. It typically, if we go have lunch and pass it to each other, it'll take about 2 days before the person then could spread it to other people. So there's almost like a two-way where it takes a little while for the virus to get in your body, for it to replicate, you know, for it to expand and duplicate enough. And then about that two-day window is likely when you're going to start spreading it to other people. Between 2 days and 5 days, the test often doesn't turn positive. And the symptoms may be very mild, maybe not there, or not recognized by the person. So that's that pre-symptomatic phase. But certainly between 2 and 5 days, there's a higher likelihood of spreading it without knowing that you have it. And that's why we advocate for testing at that, you know, approximately that day five kind of level, sometimes 7 or 10. But that's a good criteria to go get tested. But realize that if your test then shows positive, you have to think back at least 72 hours, so at least 3 days. Who might have you been exposed to during that time? Because that's the risk that they were exposed to you or me without knowing it. I know that they're really working on that with contact tracing. I understand there are challenges as high-level people go out and do public speaking or have large gatherings where masks are not used. How big is the spread, and who else could have been exposed?
Let's get a break now. Dr. George Morris is my guest today from Centricare. We're talking about COVID-19, some of the latest information, and we're back after this.